Hi, this is Steve Nerlich.
Why cheap astronomy?
Yeah, why? And this is Dear Cheap Astronomy, episode 133. Why it's always C. The speed of light isn't just the speed of light. It's the maximum speed that anything can go at. Which does then pose the question of why light can move at that speed. And to explain all that, we might need to take up this whole episode. Dear Cheap Astronomy, why does a photon move at the speed c? It may sound a bit strange to ask why light travels at the speed of light, but c isn't really the speed of light, insofar as light often moves at different and slower speeds through air, water and glass. It only moves at the speed of c in a vacuum. We've fallen into the habit of calling c the speed of light because c was discovered through experiments and mathematical modelling of light's behaviour, notably James Clerk Maxwell's formulas on electromagnetism and later Einstein's work on relativity. C is commonly represented as 300,000 kilometers a second, a speed, indeed the universe's ultimate speed limit. But what it's really telling you is that you can't cross a distance of 1 kilometer in any less time than 0.000033 seconds. Or you could say you can't cross 1 meter in less than 0.000000000033 seconds. The idea being that the time required to cross smaller and smaller distances comes very close to, but never actually reaches, zero. If it did reach zero, meaning that you could cross a distance without any time passing, then you could find yourself in two places at once. Indeed, if you could move through space without any time passing, you could be everywhere at once. This just can't happen. So the universe has to have an ultimate speed limit. It's surprising that this line of logic apparently never occurred to anyone prior to Einstein, who in any case mostly came at it through wondering how and why light moves the way that it does. Anyway, why does light, or why do photons, move at the speed of c? It is the case that hardly anything else can, and most physics books will tell you that photons move at c because they have no rest mass, which is to say that they have their own kind of momentum, so individual photons can knock electrons out of a material as per the photoelectric effect, but that's not momentum in the traditional sense of momentum being mass times velocity, since for photons there is no mass involved. It's also the case that anything that does have rest mass, which is to say anything that does have mass, can never move at c. The physics books will also tell you that anything with no rest mass, like photons, can only move at c, at least in a vacuum. That's not much of an answer. To say things that move at c do so because they are things that move at c, but that is essentially true. The mathematics of momentum and kinetic energy can be used as a proof to show that anything in motion that has mass must have a velocity less than c, and anything without mass must have a velocity that is c, at least in a vacuum. Furthermore, that mathematics suggests that this is a fundamental dichotomy. So if you are in motion and you have mass, you can only move at a speed lower than c, and if you are in motion and you don't have mass, you can only move at c. There are no other options available. Well, sort of. Apart from photons, the only other things that don't have mass are gluons and gravitons. Gravitons are totally hypothetical particles. We just think they should exist because everything else seems to have fundamental particles, so we figure gravity should too. It is demonstrably true that the effect of gravity and gravitational waves do move at c, So if gravitons really are the force carriers of gravity, then they must move at sea. However, the other massless particles, gluons, are something of an exception to the rule, since their role is to sit still within hadrons, mediating the strong nuclear force that holds quarks together within hadrons, and also holds hadrons, specifically protons and neutrons, together in a nucleus. Of course, we can say that since gluons are not in motion at all, the rule that they must move at sea when they do move doesn't have to apply. But this is some indication that it's not all that easy to make a few trite statements that explain every feature of the universe.
This is the middle bit.
So C is in fact the ultimate speed limit of the universe, and if light, that is photons, are moving in a vacuum, they will move at that speed. So it's probably a mistake to call C the speed of light, and perhaps even call it a speed in the first place. To explain. Dear Cheap Astronomy, why does light move at C? Part 2. Last week, we grappled with the issue of why light is able to move at the speed c, which is around 300,000 kilometers a second, in a vacuum. Some key points we landed were that c is actually the fastest speed that anything can move, and that light isn't the only thing that can move at c, gravity does as well. On this basis, c, a universal constant, is perhaps better thought of as defining the fundamental relationship between space and time, where it simply has to take at least 1 second to cross 300,000 kilometres, meaning that it must take at least 0.0000000033 seconds to cross 1 metre, and it's even more of a fractional instant of time to cross centimetres or even nanometres. There is a conceivable point, indeed a literal point, of no distance, which hence requires no time to cross that distance, but once you do have the tiniest iota of distance, there must also be the tiniest iota of time. Indeed, these iotas are actually defined and indivisible Planck units. So at the Planck scale, the integrated nature of space and time does seem clearer. It's just that when you bring that relationship back up to astronomical scales, it can seem a bit surprising that it takes a whole second to cross 300,000 kilometres. I mean, couldn't you just go a bit faster? And the answer is no, because this whole relationship is fundamentally defined down at the Planck scale, and that relationship is then retained up from the Planck scale. So this is where we say, yes, C is a speed, but that's not really the important issue. The important issue is that it's showing a constant relationship between space and time. So when you are dealing with a distance of 300,000 kilometres, the matching time parameter is 1 second. Apologies if we are labouring the point. We are just trying to emphasise that although C is commonly called the speed of light, it doesn't really have anything to do with light, and its representation as a speed is kind of missing the point as well. But anyway, having recapped all that, we can now return to the issue of why light moves at sea. So firstly, it's important to remember that light only moves at sea in a vacuum. If it's moving through a vacuum and then interacts with a transparent medium, like air, water or glass, it will slow down. But once it's through and back into a vacuum again, its speed will return to c straight away. This is unusual insofar as a particle with mass can also move through a vacuum at a constant velocity and potentially forever, but if it then interacts with a pliable medium like water or air, it will slow down, but coming out the other end, it will stay slowed down. And this is a good demonstration of the principles we discussed last week, where the only option available to light is to move at sea in a vacuum, whereas particles with mass can only move at less than sea. So, unfortunately, we're just stuck with saying that light moves at sea because that's what it does. Even worse than that, We've been leading you along all this time with the story of how nothing can reach the ultimate speed limit of the universe, because if a thing could cross any distance without some time passing, that thing could be everywhere all at once. But of course, light does move at the ultimate speed of the universe, and it isn't everywhere at once, so what the heck? This is where we need to introduce the principle of relativity. While the universe does have an ultimate speed limit, it's not like a big hand comes up to stop you when you get close to the limit. If you're in a spaceship with a star drive able to maintain a constant acceleration, as you approach C, you'll just keep finding that you arrive at your destination before the speedometer ever reaches C. If you try it again and go even faster, you'll just find you get to your destination even earlier. For light, which does travel at C, the distance ahead of it has shrunk to nothing, and hence light experiences no duration of travel. Indeed, it experiences no distance. So, from a photon's perspective, it is everywhere at once. And were it hypothetically possible that we could accelerate to C in our spaceship, we'd find ourselves agreeing with the photon. But since we can't ever get to C, we instead see those photons covering long distances and taking time to do it. In a nutshell, while time is what stops everything from happening at once, space-time is what stops everything from being everywhere at once.
This is the end bit.
So, there you go. Light moves at C, but it doesn't define C. Light just moves as fast as it's possible to move. If C was actually D, then light would move that fast. C is really defined by the relative quantities of space and time, which are really just two components of what we should call space-time. But that's it for another episode of Dear Cheap Astronomy, at least in this frame of reference. If you've got a space science question, or you just want to get ahead of yourself, why not write to cheapastro@gmail.com and we'll explain why you can't. Thanks for listening. Steve Nerlich, Cheap Astronomy.